Hello, friends! It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani, back with another Wednesday edition of The Helwani Show. We got some really big names once again on today's program. Tyron Woodley coming up, Anthony Pettis coming up, Chris Weidman coming up, a little UFC 261 preview as well, so stay tuned for all of that. But first, let me tell you about a couple quick things before we get rolling. Number one, as you know, Major League Baseball is back in full swing. No better place to get all the insider baseball information than with Buster Olney and the Baseball Tonight podcast. Check it out, download it, subscribe to it. It's the Baseball Tonight podcast with our good friend Buster Olney, and you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. Also, baseball is back on ESPN Plus. Catch the best of the bigs all season long with over 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Go Blue Jays. They're not doing well, but I still have hope. I have faith in the Jays. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. All right, on to today's show that does contain some language that may not be suitable for all audiences. So as always, listener discretion is advised. Enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show.
Back in your life on this Wednesday, April 21st, 2021. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new edition of the program. A lot to get to this week. We got three great interviews for all of you. UFC 261 on Saturday, three title fights, just the eighth card in UFC history to feature three title fights. We've got two women's title fights, just the second time ever in UFC history that goes down. Of course, Kamaru Usman versus Jorge Masvidal for the welterweight title is the main event. Co-main event, Zhang Weili versus Rose Namajunas for the strawweight title. Can't wait for that fight. And then, of course, Valentina Shevchenko defending her women's flyweight title against the one and only Jessica Andrade. We will talk about this card a little later on in the program. Also, we have the return of PFL. We haven't seen PFL in over a year. They took 2020 off due to the pandemic. They come back on Friday with a card headlined by one of their newest signees, Showtime Pettis, former WEC UFC champion Anthony Pettis, making his PFL debut this Friday on ESPN2 prelims on ESPN+. So, you know, I say this every week, so much going on, a lot to get to. We have three great interviews on today's show. Coming up in a bit, Chris Weidman. He's a part of the UFC 261 card going down this Saturday in Jacksonville. Capacity crowd, first time that there's a crowd in attendance for a UFC event since UFC 248 in March of 2020. Coincidentally, the last UFC card that I attended in person, that was the one headlined by Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero, feels like a gazillion years ago. Also, Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jacek. So Zhang missed the entire, you know, empty arena era, and now she's returning to a capacity crowd in Jacksonville. Symbolic that they're in Jacksonville. Of course, Jacksonville opened its arena doors to the UFC in early May of last year. First events, back after the break due to the pandemic. So they're back there this Saturday. And Chris Weidman is on the card. So we have the three title fights. Chris Weidman's fighting Uriah Hall. And this is a fight that happened actually back in September of 2010. It was a massive fight in the Northeast regional scene. It was for Ring of Combat. Uriah Hall was the Ring of Combat middleweight champion. At the time, he was 4-0, big time prospect. He was fighting a 2-0 prospect, moving down to 185. From Long Island, Chris Weidman. Now, both of them trained at the time in New York. Uriah Hall trained for Tiger Schulman's. That was his gym. And, of course, Chris Weidman was a Cerro Longo guy. And so it was a bit of a turf war. Weidman won the belt, eventually moved on to the UFC. Here they are meeting almost 11 years later in the UFC, except Weidman now trains out of South Carolina. And, you know, he moved there recently. We talk about that. Uriah Hall training at a Fortis MMA in Dallas, Texas. But it's a big fight for both guys. Both guys coming off wins. Weidman coming off the win over Omari Akhmedov. Uriah Hall has won three in a row, most recently a win over Anderson Silva. So we'll talk to Weidman about that fight, about his move, about a whole host of things. Mistakes he made as a champion. Great stuff, as always, from the All-American. We'll also talk to the aforementioned Anthony Pettis about his PFL debut. Also, why did he leave the UFC? How did that all go down? Where he's at in his career? He's fighting Cassius Clay Collard, who is one of the top-ranked bubble stars of 2020. So that's going down this Friday on ESPN2. But first, let's begin with the chosen one, Tyron Woodley. Of course, he's lost four in a row, but he has been in the news as of late. He was in Ben Askren's corner on Saturday in Atlanta. Ben Askren fought and lost to Jake Paul. There was a little incident. I don't know if you want to even call it that, but a back and forth with one of the members of Jake Paul's team in the locker room before the fight. Tyron Woodley is fired up. His contract has expired. He wants to fight Jake Paul. We talk about that. We talk about what happened on Saturday. We talk about the potential end of his UFC career. All that and a whole lot more with Tyron Woodley. I think you'll enjoy this. So coming up first is my conversation with the former UFC welterweight champion, the chosen one, Tyron Woodley. Enjoy. All right, let's say hello now to the one and only Tyron Woodley, who has definitely been in the news as of late. A lot to get to with Tyron Woodley. Appreciate his time as always. First off, Tyron, thank you for the time. Good to talk to you again.
No worries. Good to talk to you as well.
Okay, wow. So we can start in a million different directions here, but of course, we just saw you front and center this past weekend in Atlanta, the Ben Askren, Jake Paul fight, which unfortunately for you and the team didn't go your way. Before we get into your involvement in it all and how this has become somewhat personal for you, could I ask, what did you think of the way the fight played out?
I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if it was a, you know, somebody that works at the post office or a heavyweight champion in the world. If somebody punched you in the face really hard in the right spot with a 10-ounce glove, you're going to go down. It don't matter who's throwing it. So, you know, he was punching Ben to the body. Actually, what he was doing is kind of the game plan we wanted for Ben. You know, wrestlers are used to reaching out when they level change, not just punching or just, you know, fainting. So we was thinking about having him punch to the body, and then working his way up, maybe clinching, dirty boxing, really trying to gas the tank out, working his body a little bit, and not letting him stay on the outside, not letting him dictate the pace. He got off to a start where he kind of started dictating the pace. So, like I said, anybody that throw a punch hard and hit somebody, they can put him down. So it doesn't mean he's now all of a sudden that he knocked out Ben, who's not quite known for his hands. Now he's some, you know, legendary fighter that jumps all the ropes of years and years of training and stuff like that.
Okay. And so I'm just wondering, I mean, I love the relationship that you have with Ben, and I love how tight you guys have been for so many years, dating back to Missouri days. Friday, Saturday, did you think in your heart of hearts he was going to win? Because, I mean, most people were not predicting him to win.
He's so relaxed, Ariel. He's so relaxed all the time. He never, I said, do you need me? What do you need me? No, I'm good. I'm just sleeping. I'm rest. I'm watching TV. But I would never see anything different from that because he's been doing that since college. I've never really seen him get tired in the competition. And he's always done that. So I know as his training partner in college, as his coach in college, and as his training partner in MMA, that's him. So I got nothing different. And I did feel like, you know, he had a chance to beat him. But I always thought it was going to be later. I always thought it was going to be between rounds 4 and 8. You know what I mean? After you swing at somebody and miss and get clinched and hit and dirty box and punched in the stomach and they all over you and being unorthodox, I thought that would help him out quite a bit. But, you know, the cards fell the way that they did. Unfortunately, just for the whole community, we got to hear this motherfucker one more time for another time. Like, you know, walking around there. And it's the clout. It's so disgusting what our society do for clout. So many people that are MMA guys on his nuts for clout. It's other entertainment, other rappers, other celebrities. They all celebrating this, and I like it. It's a show. I get it. But, like, fight me then. If you really want to fight somebody, you want to say you beat somebody, fight a world champion that actually is known for knocking motherfuckers out. Fight somebody that actually, you know, will get in your face and make it real hairy for you. And then if you beat me, you can really say you're a fighter. But the second Ben got done in the fight and he got on a conference and said, I want to see Tyron fight Jake. Now it's green light. Now where's all that talk you was talking? Now everybody that he's talking about is opposite of me. Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz. No, fight me. I'm your same weight. You know what I mean? You had a lot to say in the locker room. Let's fight. And that's when you hear the crickets because some people are really built for this and some people not. It's not even an MMA fighter fighting a YouTuber. It's a man fighting a man. You want to talk shit? Let's handle it.
Okay, so that was literally my next question because I saw his tweet to DC of all people saying like, "I'll," and then you know,
shout
my boy
out to DC too because DC stays out of most of it, and just like don't disrespect somebody, like especially like I can be rah rah, I can do all that stuff. Like I came from that background. Like don't get it twisted. You may see me on the desk at ESPN and you know talking. You may he's so sweat, but I used to fuck people up for a living. That's what I did. I got my name from gangbanging and fighting. I was fighting before it was, I was verified in the street before I got verified on Instagram. Jake, you got the steam. You want to go around and parade that you're a fighter. You want to say you beat one of our greats. His dog said, what's up? His dog said, what's up? Let's fight. Let's go after boxing, MMA or both, or trilogy or wrestling, boxing, whatever you want to do. Thumb wrestling, chess, checkers. If you want to go in there and get it on, let's do it. I don't think he wants to do it. They offered me this. They offered me to fight him in November. Obviously, I couldn't do it because I'm, you know, on a contract with the UFC. But for this type of shit, I'm at the holler at Dana or somebody. Hey, guys, I don't know what's going on. I know how this shit works out, but let me beat this dude at.
So Dana was asked about your future at the press conference, and it seemed like he was leaning towards, you know, maybe parting ways. So, like, you don't know where you stand right now with the UFC?
You know what? I'm just grateful, Ari. I'm going to be real with you. Like I said in the past at the press conference, there's some times that I felt like I was right. And sometimes looking back, I could have been like always looking and lurking and waiting just because I don't trust a lot of people. And there's been some times where I felt like some things could have been done differently. So I'm always as a businessman and just somebody that I just grew up with this lifestyle. Like you got to look over your shoulder. You got to watch. I'll sit if you with me in a bar, I'll paint the whole scene. I'll tell you where the exits are. I'll tell you who looks suspect and who whatever. I'm that guy. I'll do that every single time. So I take that into business. I take that into every arena I'm in, that's protecting me over a lot of stuff. A lot of times some shit could have happened to me and it kept me alive and kept me safe. So I feel like that went into a lot of the transactions and a lot of miscommunication. And then you have several different people speaking on your behalf. And then it's the internet. Then it's the media. It wasn't a lot of direct contact. So for some of those things, I feel like it was on me. Some of the things I don't feel like it was on me. And I don't regret as a man feeling like I was doing what I was doing was right. But I do look back. I did feel like it got to the point where it was so far. It was so much of me going heads up that it became almost irreparable. You know what I mean?
I know you said you don't necessarily have regrets, but like that was a, I don't know if I've ever heard you say that about your time in the UFC, that maybe you could have done things a little differently. And yeah, of course, what happened happened. The past is the past. But I'm wondering, because, you know, I used to hear Rashad Evans talk about you and say like, man, maybe if you like meet them halfway, it'll be better for you in the end and whatnot. Would that be advice that you would give to a young kid, a 24-year-old coming into the UFC? Like, hey, maybe don't do this the way I did it.
You know what? I give a lot of people advice like this. I tell them, you know, it's a lot of people that's in the UFC that's related to me. Like I got a first cousin that's in the UFC.
Really?
I got people that train with me that's in the UFC.
You mean working in the UFC or fighting in the UFC?
No, fighting in the UFC. Oh. So what I do is I say, you know, right now my relationship is a little shaky. So anything you need from me, I got you. If you want to train, I got you. But your affiliation with me, don't make it too tight because I don't want to get into no bullshit and you're guilty by association. I want your journey and your path in the UFC to be yours and your own. And, you know, that's just out of love and respect for them. It's not going to hurt me or help me to be affiliated with them, but it could, if I get into a standoff or some shit with, you know, the brass and you so tight with me, I don't know if that's going to affect you. You know what I mean?
Would it be fair to say that what, you know, I love that you want to take some time off and go train and just have fun, but top of mind, the thing that interests you the most and is like burning inside of you is this Jake Paul fight. This is what you want.
Yeah. I mean, cause it's like, T.I. wrote this song recently. And it was like, when somebody, violation is an automatic demonstration. If somebody violated, you got to make an example out of them. A lot of people are not upset with me, but they surprised I would let that happen. They just know me so well. And the UFC fans are just now getting to know me. You know the version of me that God conformed and changed me into. You don't know the original me. You don't know the reason why I'm able to do what I'm able to do and where my mind is at sometimes when I fight. Sometimes I black out and I'm thinking dark shit. I don't always hear about it, but sometimes I got to take myself back to where I was at to get the job done. So, like, that's just something that when you clout chase on that level, you know what I mean? You got to be made an example of. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. And as far as the UFC thing, like, I don't have no smoke with nobody. I ain't had no bad talks with nobody, you know, ill conversations. I came to the UFC on a misunderstanding from the jump. Like, we sorted it out at the end, but like, I came over already flagging coin is difficult because of a strike force negotiation. When I first came in, my first fight, I never came in the UFC with a fresh slate. I came in, I fought a guy that had only really been stopped by GSP, that was really close fight with Ben, IFL champ, and he had won a lot of fights. He was a veteran. He was a very good fighter. And it was a tough matchup for me. And I found a way to get around his hands and knock him out. And that kind of gave me a better slate with Dana from the beginning. You know what I mean? But I still came over with, he's difficult to work with based on this negotiation that I was asleep during. I was knocked out asleep during this negotiation. I woke up and it's like, all right, the deal's done. All right, cool. All right, I'm fighting Nate Mark right now. But I wasn't even involved with it, but I got coined as difficult. And I always had to chase that down. And if I ask one question that any businessman should be able to ask anyway, I'm being difficult. And then it became like, damn, well, I'm already going to be coined as difficult. Let me just try to make things fair, at least. You know what I mean?
So, you know, Saturday, all this happened, and then and your name gets brought up, and it seems like, you know, a gazillion MMA fighters are gunning for this young man, Jake Paul. But, you know, if I'm being honest, and I'm not just saying it because we're talking, the one that has like the ready-made storyline is you. That was your friend, yeah. The incident, like it's all right there. Also, he's saying he wants to step up, but it seems like it's Jake Paul versus MMA. It's all right there. So let me ask you, since Saturday night, have there been any talks? Has your team?
I can't talk to anybody right now.
Okay.
But I can talk to UFC. And, you know,
have you reached out or has your team reached out?
I reached out, but I just did it like a couple of minutes ago. So I can't even,
okay.
I don't even know if I got a message back yet since we've been on a deal, but I reached out to them and, I agree with you. You know, if I was here and tell you that I want to beat this dude for my dog Ben, I'll be lying.
190 he weighed for this fight. And I know
I weigh 200, 205.
Let's okay. So no concerns about the size. Can you at least say, and maybe not, but I'd like to know, are you at all, like fundamentally for a guy who's 3-0, regardless of opponent, regardless of who he's fought, does he have some skills? Like, are you at all impressed with the way he has come along?
He has skills, yeah. I mean, you can go to any title boxing or cardio kickboxing 90-minute session and you can locate skills there. Okay. Do he have skills? Yeah, he got skills, but am I finna sit here and just think that he gonna put a butterfly in my stomach? No. I've been training at Wildcard Boxing since 2008 with Eric Brown. I didn't say it. I didn't tell it because at that time I had family's obligations in St. Louis. I couldn't afford to go to LA that often. I couldn't afford to be around those coaches. Had I had the time and had the freedom and the money, I would have lived in LA and trained nothing but boxing 100%. So I kept it behind closed doors because my opponents and my adversaries and my oppositions, they had the times. They may have had the freedom. They may have had the funds to go out there and train boxing 100% of the time using my formula. I got that formula from George St. Pierre. I watched what he did and what Koscheck did. It's funny, I fought Koscheck and I was trying to fight GSP, but I took their formula and I made my own. I did this in 2006. Mm. And that's how I won those titles. And that's how I went on the run. I trained eight. Look, go. You can go back and look. Koscheck did this interview. He AK said, I do 85% striking. I'm going to take everybody down. I'm using my wrestling for conditioning. If I can't outstrike the striker, I'm going to take him down. If I can't, most likely I'll be able to outstrike the grappler and he won't be able to take me down. So I'm going to control the fight. I'm like, duh. So I did that. And I watched what George did. George trained with the best MMA team at the time, Greg Jackson. And now I would say American Top Team was the best team. Then he trained with the Olympic level wrestlers in Canada and whatever high level wrestlers he could find. And then he trained with the, you know, the best grapplers, you know, the Henzo Gracie team and my man, John, draw a blank on his last name, but you have to talk about Danaher. Train with them. And then he had Greg Jackson put it all together. He had great training partners. He did it all right. And I'm like, that's what I want to do. And I took that. So I'm not worried about no boxer. I'm not worried about some internet dude. I'm not worried about somebody that fought two people just to basically get us revved up. But people want to watch the fight. And more importantly, and more than ever for me, people want to see me whoop his. They don't want to see just anybody.
Two last things, just, you know, since we're talking and you know them so well, who do you think wins this weekend?
I'm shooting for Masvidal. I would like to see him. He got the BMF belt, but, you know, I mean, his story was very similar to Robbie's. When Robbie had this, you know, back and forth, you know, Elite AC strike for his career, and then got a fresh breath of wind, came in the UFC, stormed it, got close, fell down, got it, defended a few times, and gave us some of the best fights we've ever seen in a championship. You know, it was good. I supported Robbie all the way up until, to be honest, until I fought him. I had his back. I was always going to see him. And I feel the same way about Masvidal. I think that I want to support him. I want to wish him well. I think he had a great chance to win this fight. Striking the boxing and the ability to stop the takedown has always been there. But Usman, you got to give him his respect and you got to give him his props. You know, you can say what you want, but he's a fighter that makes adjustments on the fly. He does make those adjustments. He'll make you think he's wrestling, then he'll come up striking, and you're like, oh, why are you striking with me? Then he'll go to wrestling. Then he'll go from one takedown to another, and he can do it for five-minute rounds. He may not punch super hard. He may not, you know what I mean, have the most blitzing speed and the crispiest technique, but is very, very effective. He's effective at winning. He's very good at winning. So, Masvidal is just going to have to be able to switch with him, switch gears. The times when Masvidal switched gears, he switched gears against Till. Till knocked him down. He smiled, came up and switched gears. There's been other times in fights where Masvidal didn't switch gears. Damian Maia kept going for the same attempt, and he couldn't find a solution to get him out of there, and he basically got pressed against the octagon enough to lose. There's been other fights where he didn't switch the gear. But this run of Masvidal, in my opinion, is his best run. This is his best sprint. He's been in his biggest bag all the way, from the Diaz fight to, the Cerrone fight to the Darren Till fight. I'm not counting the Ben fight. You know, that's their beef. I ain't got nothing to do with that. That was a very quick moment. We didn't see much from either guy. So those fights prior to that, you got to give him his props, man. He got hands and he got pretty much everything. Kicks, hands, body shots, footwork. He can take a punch. He can stop shots. You know, he was in Diaz's guard, disrespecting it. He wasn't, terrified of submission. So I think if you put it together, it's going to be who can make the adjustments. If he can make the adjustments in there, if Usman switch stances or start coming for, shots or body locks instead or striking with him instead. If he can do that, yeah, I think he in there.
Last thing. Obviously, it didn't go your way against Luque. And if you are heading into a new chapter of your life and career, do you at least, the big story going into that, as we discussed, where's the old tire and can he go into that extra gear, be aggressive? You were aggressive. And yeah, maybe, and as you said, like maybe it was to a fault, like maybe you were just a smidge too aggressive.
I don't regret it. No, I think I was right there. I saw everything. I saw the shots.
And, so can you leave in peace? Will you leave in peace, or do you leave like, man, I want to leave on a high note?
If that's my story, I still think I'm Hall of Fame and UFC for what I've done. And I think that I can walk away with my head up, and I would rather have taken a lesson, given it my all in the prior three fights where we watched me stand out there and we knew that wasn't me. I could not live with that. This last one, I never want to get used to losing. It's never going to be okay with me. It still burns, still frustrating because, I trained so hard. I threw so many punches in practice. That's why I was punching so much. I was throwing 1,100 punches to 1,200 punches in like three-minute rounds. Like that was my conditioning before sparring. And I just knew I had the volume. So I can walk around with my head high knowing that I put myself in position to win. And I went out there and I was competing. And I was in there. I was chasing it, you know what I mean? And that felt good to do that. It didn't feel good to come up short. But yeah, if that's how the cookie crumbled, then, can't nobody say shit to me, man. I did everything. When nobody said I would do it, I beat the who's who of the sport. I didn't get a lot of the credit at the time I did it, but I never got into this shit for credit. I got into it to be the greatest. And, had I not gotten off path a couple of times, and it was myself, like we talked about this, a couple of things I did to get myself off track. Had I not done that, I was two fights away. If I took care of Usman, took care of Kobe, who gonna tell me I'm not better than George? You know what I mean? Like I would have wiped the whole new generation, which is a better generation of fighter than at that time. They're more equipped with more skills, knowledge, more diet, nutrition, strength and conditioning, mindset, film breaking down, strength coaches, massage coaches. Everything was so different right now in the sport. Had I beat those two guys, I have a hard time people not calling me GOAT, not calling me the greatest. So I just feel good where I'm at. I'm healed. I'm not injured anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, regardless of what happened and regardless of what you do, they will miss you when you are gone. That's what I maintain. You will be one of those fighters, and you don't need me to say this, but who will be appreciated a hell of a lot more when he's gone than when he was active. And that's just the way sometimes it works differently. And that's a shame, but it just, it will age okay beautifully. That. And that's
I'm
fine.
At
yeah.
Peace with that. I was at peace with that after I fight Darren Till. I kind of figured that was my role, but I had to remember it. I told God, if I get in this thing, he let me use my gifts and my skills and ability, I'll glorify him with it. And every fight you watch, Strikeforce all the way through my first couple UFC fight, at the end, you can watch me on screen. To God be the glory. What? That's kind of slipped a little bit. And it was to myself be the glory, and to, you know what I mean, my coaches, and to these, all these things. And more than just winning fights and achieving, like, I think God showed me that, and that was actually my path. But I took some detours. Like, I got caught up with the lifestyle. Like, I was living the lifestyle, became a part of me. And where I'm at mentally, where I'm at is, like, peace of mind, where I'm at physically, I'm at the best place. It's my biggest victory. So now, with a clear mind, with a healed body, and with still driving, I'm still like God. I still got it. Ain't nothing slowed down. You know what I mean? So now I'm ready to just kind of go after it. So that's where I'm at, man. I'm excited about it.
All right. Perhaps it is Jake Paul. We'll see how it all plays out.
Jake Paul, quit being a bitch, man. Sign up. You want to be a fighter? You want to say you to fight? You calling out all these guys? I want to fight you in a boxing ring. We can do 6 rounds, 8 rounds. We can do 1 round. We can flip a coin. I don't give a fuck what we do. If you want to fight, you want to fight somebody real, you fight me. Quit calling out everybody else. You got a problem right here, and I'm trying to get it solved.
Tyron, thank you. Good luck getting that fight. Appreciate the time as always.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, let's say hello now to the former WEC lightweight champion, the former UFC lightweight champion, the former UFC fighter who's making his PFL debut, his highly anticipated PFL debut this Friday, April 23rd, against Cassius Clay Collard, the first event of PFL's new season, which kicks off this Friday on ESPN Plus and ESPN2. He's the one and only Anthony Showtime Pettis, who's in Atlantic City. A lot to talk to him about. Anthony, thank you so much for the time.
Of course, man.
Great to talk to you as always. So I actually want to start almost in chronological order, because the last time I spoke to you was right before your fight on December 19th, which ended up being your last UFC fight. When you walked out of the cage that night in Las Vegas after the W, did you know in your heart that that was your last UFC fight?
I didn't know, honestly, because all the emotions after a fight, you know, that the win, you bank on yourself when you fight your contract out, you know, and there was a lot of pressure riding on that. I was kind of disappointed there was no fans, because, man, like, this is, I grew up under these lights, you know, I started my career off in the WEC and the UFC, and it was like one of them things that I didn't know, honestly. I was like, could have went either way.
You did know that it was the last fight on your deal, right?
Yes.
Was it hard to kind of block that out as your, you know, great performance, but, you know, last fight, potential end of a chapter, potential end of an era? Did you feel like there was a little more pressure on you to go out on a high note?
Most definitely. Yeah. I mean, you got to feel that way. I mean, I think that's what drew me, like, the excitement again. It was like, it felt like a new feeling to me again. I'm like, damn, like, I haven't felt this way in a long time, where everything was riding on one fight, you know, like, since the title run, you know, like, it was like trying to get back, trying to bounce back, trying to find a way back. And that one right there, you know, after seeing my little bro go, and I'm like, we had like, I think 2 fights left, coronavirus hit. And I'm just like, let's do it. Let's try it. Let's see what the next chapter is. Cause I mean, I'm only 34 years old, man. And I still love training. I still love being part of the, you know, all the fight environment, you know, whether it's training, teaching, coaching. So, you know, that's why I'm where I'm at now.
Were you happy with your performance that night?
The biggest thing I was happy about was my ability to bounce back. The first round, I did a jump, like number three jump round kick, and I slipped. And then he caught me well. Like the only real good punch he hit me with was like right on the ground right there. So I faced some adversity early, and then I had to like regather myself. And that's the skill set I've been working on. So it felt good to be able to use that mind muscle and flex that muscle in there and show myself that, you know, that it does work.
So what's interesting is that fight happens on December 19th. And like about a week later, you're a PFL fighter. So things happen really quickly here. Why did they happen so quickly? Like, did the UFC say you can go? Because usually there's like a negotiation period and there's, you know, a whole process. This happened in the blink of an eye. Why?
Man, first round management, Melky, you know, great team behind me. Like, I told him I wanted to wait. Like, let's get me through the New Year's and Christmas so I could have some time with my family. And then I ended up taking my daughter to Miami. And, you know, obviously Melky's there. So we talk business and, you know, we're getting into business. All of a sudden deals are popping up. And I'm just like, man, looks like an amazing deal. I mean, honestly, we set myself up for probably my best financial year ever in my fight career.
This year. Like this fight that you're competing in on Friday, are you making more now than you were making in the UFC? Even if you don't win the tournament.
Guaranteed money. Yes. Yes.
Really? Wow. Okay. So,
not, for me, you know, my fighting career, man, like I took fights on 2-3 weeks notice, you know, and payday has been amazing. You know, I've always been taken care of, you know, the Wheaties box, Showtime kick. I mean, all that, you know, guaranteed me to be taken care of. I think the UFC did, you know, amazing job, but when I was coming to these contract negotiations, I started looking around and just, you know, seeing what else was out there, seeing what my little brother just made. You know, that was another one. I was like, yo, like people think that Sergio took a downgrade. The common fans, you know, they're like, oh, the Bellator, even down. Man, he got paid, you know, amazing money. I think he's probably making the most money in his weight class in any organization.
Wow.
So that's for him. That's a promotion, you know. So I was celebrating when Serge, like, he just got promoted, man, and now he's fighting for a world title. So it feels good where the Pettis bros are at, man. I think we're just making some smart business moves and, you know, taking care of our brand.
Speaking of your brother Sergio, who fights for Bellator and will fight for their title, as you mentioned, 135. Did you consider them? Did you want to rejoin them? Were they a player in all of this, or was it just PFL?
I mean, like I said, it happened quick. So like when the contract started coming, like they just started like being interested, you know, and like we started getting some numbers, we started getting some feelers. I mean, we have great relationships with, you know, all the guys at Bellator, Scott Coker, 1FC, PFL. Like we've built some relationships over the years. So I think, you know, once they started coming in, the biggest thing I wanted was Sergio to have his own home. I feel like, you know, when he was in the UFC, everybody's like, oh, it's, you know, Sergio Pettis is Anthony Pettis's little brother. Whereas now, man, he's Sergio Pettis, you know, the number one contender in Bellator.
Okay. So it felt like a good fit with PFL. Did the UFC ever make a competitive offer to keep you?
They made an offer before my last fight, the last fight. You know, they usually do that, you know, before your last fight's up, they make an offer. But at that point, you know, I was just like, you know, starting the year, you know, 2020, I went back to 155 and I got submitted, you know, and I was like, man, like it's in a bad spot. And then March hit and all of a sudden coronavirus hits and man, no one knew what was going to happen. And that's when I kind of started plotting and planning, like, you know, what's my next moves? Like once fights come back, I wanted to stay busy. I know how many fights I had left. And man, I think it's paid off right now. You know, the way I feel right now, like mentally motivated, the structure I have in my life, you know, I have a kid on the way in June, man. So life is good.
And I was going to get to the kid, but congratulations on another one on the way. That's very exciting. One last thing on the last chapter, if you will. Do you feel like you left on good terms? Any hard feelings there about them not matching or anything? Or were you ready for a break and everyone left on good terms?
Wait, hard feelings is like
maybe me,
like fights that I missed or like
no, meaning like promotion. did you feel like, hey, you know, I was a little surprised the UFC didn't match this offer or didn't value, you know?
Oh, no, bro, no. This is a business, man. I think I understand the business more than, you know, everybody. I've been around so long, you know. I made my debut when I was my 18th birthday, you know. So I've been doing this, you know, for a long time, and it's a business, you know. Like machine, the UFC created a machine, man. Like there's fights every week, and there's guys that I don't even know their names, you know. I'm like, dang, there's so many fights. So, you know, the UFC's, you know, that they're a machine. You know, I've had a great time over there. I've done so much. I fought everybody in three-weight classes. So it was just like one of them things. What's next?
I'm always curious about this. Like, do you get a call from? Does anyone call you? Thank you for your time, your service. Like, it was a great decade with you. I mean, you're one of the faces of the promotion. Man, did you get that?
Of course, bro. Yeah, of course. You know, me and Dana just texted this weekend. I mean, obviously it wasn't a great text, you know, considering what we were texting about. But right. Me and Dana are still cool. Sean Shelby is the one that gave me a shot in the WEC, bro. So I mean, like McMaynard. I mean, the whole UFC family, man. Even like the PI, like, everybody in the PI. I grew up with that, you know. So it's like no hard feelings at all on my end. I feel like I understand the business that I'm in, and I lined myself up for an amazing opportunity, and here I am.
How much did you know about the PFL before you signed with them? Like, had you, you know, they've been around for a couple of seasons now. Formerly, they were World Series of Fighting, but the whole format changed.
Yeah.
Were you familiar with them?
I was familiar with them. I mean, I wouldn't say I like watched all their fights. And I definitely watched lightweight, and I was watching 170 because I was like, you know, everybody in my weight class, I watched Bellator everywhere. Their format, like I heard like initially when they popped out, they were paying fighters a salary. And that's why I Googled it and started looking into it. I'm like, what is this? You know, professional fighters league, guys are getting, you know, monthly salaries, getting treated like professional athletes, like some guaranteed, you know, stuff that makes fighters able to train, man. Like without us being able to pay our bills, you know, we can't focus on the fight. So I that was my initial like interaction. I heard they're making salaries. I Googled it, saw their roster, started watching some fights. I went to a couple fights, you know, in Vegas. I went to some fights at the Mandalay. You know, it was another, for me, it was like another option. It was like, the more our organizations for us fighters, the better. Like now we have options.
100%. I couldn't agree with that anymore. And then you get offered in your debut, Clay Collard, who I don't know how much you've been following him last year, but he was kind of like one of the darlings of the boxing world with Top Rank, active guy, yeah. Cassius Clay Collard. How familiar were you with him? Of course, a former UFC fighter as well.
I wasn't familiar with his MMA background, honestly.
Wow. Like, you knew him as the boxer?
I knew him as a boxer. Yeah. Oh, wow. I saw him box. I watched boxing. So I saw him box before. And then when they said his name, I started Googling him. I'm like trying to find fights and trying to find like, you know, something for me to like base my training camp off of. And then I couldn't find much, man. Like it's been a while since he fought, you know, MMA. He did fight Max Holloway back in the day, mm-hmm. you know, so I think he had some tough fights. You know, it was weird because it's like, it feels like the beginning of mixed martial arts again, man. Like you don't know who you're fighting. I don't know exactly what's coming. You know, I'm getting sponsors again, making my fight shorts. It feels good again, man. It feels like I'm back in the beginning.
You feel a little rejuvenated? Would it be fair to say that?
I always feel like rejuvenated. I feel more structured. That's what, like, if I had to put a word to it, I know when I'm fighting. I have my whole schedule laid out for the year. I know how much I'm making. I know what sponsors mm-hmm. I can get, what holes I need to fill. And the only scary thing is, like, these guys are kind of unknown. I mean, not unknown, but they're, like, making their way up. So, everybody's asking me, like, what's the most dangerous thing about this is, like, this dude has nothing to lose. Like, he literally has to go out there and just bite on his mouth guard and go. So that's what we're getting ready for. That's why it feels like the old days again. Like, guys just coming at me and not knowing what to expect.
Do you already even have, like, your next date? Like, do you know?
Yep. I have all of them. I have the whole year. The whole season already. So I fight this Friday.
Yeah.
And I come back and I fight 7 weeks. And then after that one, I fight in 8 weeks. And then we have the season finale. Obviously, yeah. I earned that one.
Of course.
That's four fights. And then with the way I restructured our deal, man, that's why I said, like, financially, like, I put myself in a great spot.
That's awesome. Now, one interesting thing about this scenario is you're in Atlantic City. That's where the first few weeks are going to be. And one thing that, you know, raised some eyebrows is the fight, like, you're fighting April 23rd. I do believe you had to arrive 17 days in advance of when you're fighting. So you're literally in this, like, you know, UFC, it's a 5 days out, a week out, Bellator, 17 days. So you're in the midst of that now. You're almost at the end. What has this been like?
Initially, the first 2 days was like, I was like, man, I can't do this. Like, because we had to be in quarantine in our room until we can, like, get tested positive or negative, and then we get out to the bubble. The first 2 days was a little rough because I'm cutting weight. I'm jump roping in the room. I mean, they gave me a beautiful room. The view's amazing. Like, I'm definitely well taken care of. And then once we got out of the bubble, man, I'm telling you, like, I actually enjoyed it. It's been a while since I had this much alone time to, like, work through my thoughts and work through, like, all the insecurities and positive things that I have, you know, before fights. Because, you know, before fights, it's like a quick rush. You're there for 5 days. You got mad media. You got to still train. You still got to cut weight. And then, boom, all of a sudden, it's fight night. Here, man, I got to actually, like, to work through all them thoughts and get through all them, like, just everything that comes along with a fight. And it actually feels good to be, like, in this, like, even me and Duke were just talking about it, to be, like, having nothing to do but train. Like, we're just focused on the mission. Like, there's literally nothing to do here but train. And, you know, watch film and just, you know, hang out with Duke again. So it just reminds me of the old days again.
Does he, like, did he have to be there 17 days out as well? Wow. So that's a real commitment from your team.
He didn't have to be. He didn't have to be here. But me and Duke, you know, Duke's never missed a fight, except for the fight that we fought on together in Milwaukee. that was the only time he's never been in my corner. Like, he was fighting the main event. I was a co-main event. So, I mean, Duke's just a rider, bro. Like, this is something.
Wow, you're talking early days.
Early days. Yeah, yeah. Like, before, Duke was still fighting. So,
wow.
The main event. That's when Showtime was born. That's when I got slammed on my shoulder. And I separated my shoulder and I high kick knockout the guy. And Duke was the main event. He didn't see the fight until afterwards. He's like, man, he's like, every time you go out there, you put on a show, we're calling you Showtime. And that's where Showtime was born.
Wow, I didn't know that. Were you even, like, was he even training you at the time, or he was just?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, he was. Coach.
So I was the co-main event in Milwaukee, and then he was the main event. So it was like his last retirement fight. Kind of him passing the torch to me, kind of. That's what he
was. Wow. That is, yeah. And what has he been? So he's been there the whole time. What about your other corner men? Have they also been there the whole time?
So I had usually Serge is my corner man, but he's fighting in 2 weeks for a world title, so we didn't bring him in for 17 days. Honestly, right. He probably should have came. Now that I've experienced it, he would have been in an amazing spot. But Christian Rodriguez, a training partner of mine, and then I have my nutritionist, Pena Performance, out here doing my stuff.
And are you allowed to like walk on the boardwalk and all that, or is it really so they're really keeping this bubble legit?
They spent a lot of money on this bubble, man. Like once we were like out of here, like, I mean, there's. Because all the fight cards are here. So it's my fight card's here, the next fight card, the next one, all the weight classes are here. So all them hotel rooms, all the corners, food for all of us. They have like a main room that's like all of our training rooms. So we have like probably like 8 training rooms. We all have personal sauna. I mean, they did a great job of making sure we had everything we need to do this professionally.
Does it kind of, I've seen like the promo clips and I see what they're doing. Does it feel a little bit like a few years ago for you where it feels like you are the new face of PFL, like they are really getting behind you? Are you feeling that love as well? And kind of like the WC UFC championship days?
Most definitely, man. Like I feel all that love. And even the fighters, having like crossing paths with the other fighters, they want to take pics and like, it's dope, man. Like I've earned that. I feel like at this point in my career, I've earned that. The work I put in 145 pounds, 150 pounds and 170 pounds. I feel like I earned that right. And I still got to keep it. Like, no matter what you did in the past, like you got to perform. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm like, I got to go make sure this promotion is on my back. I'm going to take this promotion and take it everywhere.
Do you feel, so we talked about like the pressure going into the last fight, which was, going out on a high note. Is there a new pressure now to make them realize that you are worth the investment? Like, it's like kind of like starting a new job, right? Like you want to prove to the people that, hey, I was worth it. Do you feel that? Does that something you think about?
Now, I think I stopped thinking about other people's perception of me, and that's kind of helped me out a lot. I used to go out there, like, when the cameras are on, I'm, like, looking to see what cameras are watching me, or, and it breaks that focus. So, like, I think I'm mature enough in my career to understand, like, if I focus on that, now my performance is going to suffer because I'm not focused on what really matters.
Okay. Last time we spoke as well, you talked about, working with someone to, build up that mindset and evolve as a human being and as a fighter. Are you still doing that? Is this still a part of your maturation?
100%, man. Yeah, man, that's something that's been there. I still haven't drank alcohol since our, well, actually, I had some wine, like actually controlled alcohol, but like, okay. Not like what I used to. And then also my mindset coach, he works with some guys in the UFC as well. He's like part of their like package with the Performance Institute. And the biggest thing that he thing I was proud of is like, he said, after my interview, he had like 80 new fighters come and explore that. Yeah, so I'm like, man, if I could do that, because what I learned from that, I'm like, man, everybody needs this. My family needs this. It's like crazy how good it feels to be able to talk about things.
So are you still working with that guy?
Yeah, same guy.
What's his name again?
Micah,
that's right. And did you feel like that performance was a byproduct of your work with him?
1,000,000%. That first round, I've been there before. I like when I got hit, I could smell the blood, right? And I'm like, oh, all of a sudden these old thoughts came up, different fights, different positions. Like, oh, I can't be stuck on my back. And then I was just like, when I watched the fight, I could see. I regathered myself, restructured myself. I even slipped again. And then second round, I came out. I'm like, yo, let's keep present. Let's see what I got to do to win this fight. Not all these other fights, not these old battles I'm fighting or stuff that's going on in other places. So it felt good to be present in there, make myself be present.
And did he, like, did you, I'm assuming like you kind of had like a download with him after the fight and after fight week, did he say anything? Okay, now we need to work on this. Like, how do you go for, okay, so you have a great, like, first stretch with him, you have a win. Do you just keep building, or is there like a new hurdle to attack? You know what I mean?
It gets deep. And I think it's kind of based on each person, bro. It kind of like depends on what happened in your past. What kind of struggles are you struggling with? Is it recent stuff and the past stuff? So like once you're aware of it and you're aware of your thoughts, and when my thoughts like leave the room, and bringing it back. That's the skill set that I took from it the most. Like when I'm practicing with Duke and I'm doing the same thing we've been doing a million times and my mind just like wanders out that room, I'm not actually getting that skill set. So like now I have the ability to bring, like recognize it first. And then like, obviously not, don't judge myself on it. Like, all right, whatever you were thinking about, it's a thought. We get 70,000 thoughts, you know, a day. We can't control this thing. And then we bring it back and man, the focus I get and like the amount of skill, my skill sets are jumping up again. Like, I'm like, whoa, now I'm getting better again. I'm getting new games because I'm actually present in the training session and my mind's not like wandering. Because I mean, it gets repetitive. I mean, sure. How many times can you do a jab, cross, hook, high kick? That's why I do all these cartwheel jump spin kicks because I'm like trying to break that, you know, that flow up. And then I realized, I'm like, man, those little details, like when I watched Ben Henderson one, I had such clean details because I was on it. You know, like the Showtime kick happened fifth round, but it was like after these nice little basics happened. And like, I lost touch of that. And I was trying to force these power moves. It didn't happen. All of a sudden my mind's gone and boom, 25 minutes goes by, 15 minutes goes by and I lose a decision.
You mentioned people reached out to Micah and to you after that. After you talked about that, I'm wondering if a lot of, and you don't have to tell me, but like, I wonder if a lot of fighters are like, hey, what's it like at the PFL? You know, how are they treating you? I feel like, cause just on your social media, it looks great. And I bet there's some guys who are asking for your insight, right?
Nah, not yet.
For real?
I think,
I'm surprised.
I mean, I think, I don't like fight weeks and stuff. I don't look at social media like that.
Yeah.
I don't go into the messages like that. Any one messages could literally like take your thoughts and mess right. You up for things. So maybe they are. I'll check my inbox like after this, but I think hopefully, you know, I'm showing, you know, everybody that there's options. I mean, look at Ben Askren. Ben Askren just made one of his biggest paydays of his life. Obviously, he didn't get the result he wanted, but still, man, he's able to take care of his family in a different way than he was before that fight.
So that's a perfect segue. I'd be remiss if I don't ask you about Ben, longtime teammate of yours. What were your thoughts after watching that on Saturday?
It took forever, so I actually fell asleep, man. I'm in the East Coast, so it was like 2 a.m.
You didn't like the musical acts? You felt like
it was cool, man, but I mean, I was cutting weight and training and stuff. So like, I wake up in the morning, I'll check my phone. It's like, damn, man, like I just couldn't believe it. Like I spin back kicked Ben in the head, and he didn't get knocked out. He just walked right through it and like took me down. Like, so I know how tough he was. That's why I was like banking on him to go longer than he did. But I mean, boxing is boxing. Like the way Jake Paul had structure and Ben was like putting his feet together. You see the technical error. He just got caught. It sucks. Obviously he's a teammate. I'm just glad he's okay. And if anybody can handle it, it's Ben. He's one of them guys that's just like tough skin. He knows who he is. Like win or lose, he knows who he is. Great team around him, his family. So yeah, I'm just glad he's okay.
When you were leaving the UFC, were there any talks of you fighting Jake Paul? De La Hoya, not Jake Paul.
De La Hoya. Yeah, how so serious? Before I signed So literally, it was that same day, bro. So like, I bring my daughter to Miami. We get the PFL deal. We start getting phone calls from everybody else. And all of a sudden, somebody that was formerly with the UFC reached out and was like, hey, before you sign anything, let's talk about an option that might be on the table for you. And I'm like, all right, what is it? And he was like, De La Hoya. I'm like, yo, pins down. No one's signing nothing. Like, I grew up watching De La Hoya. So we were trying to negotiate for like an April fight so I could still have the season. So like I knew I was fighting April 23rd. So like April 6th, like beginning of April will work out. But that kind of negotiation stopped because he wanted to push back. And like after seeing the memes of what he, you know, this weekend, man, he's going through a battle. So hopefully we can get that right.
So he wants to fight July 3rd still, despite what happened this weekend. Is that still a possibility for you or now that you're with
PFL,
can't happen?
Yeah, now I'm in the season now. So like, my fights are April, June, August, and then championship. And then once the championship's done, then I have some free time to figure some stuff out. And that was another big reason too. Like I have the options of doing other things.
How do you feel about this whole Jake Paul phenomenon?
Man, I mean, initially I was like, all right, he fought a basketball player. He's like, and then he just got lucky. And I was like, he's got caught a basketball player. And then he fights Ben Askren and he makes him look like that. And, it just opens another lane up, man. Look at Tyron Woodley was there. I hate the disrespect that these guys were giving Ty. You know, I feel like they're trying to like get him to egg him on a little bit. Cause I know Jay Love too, but I'm like, man, like we got to hold it down, man. Kind of felt like MMA versus boxing for a little bit.
Would you like to see Tyron fight Jake?
Oh yeah. I mean, I'd like to see Ty fight either Jay Love, cause that was the good guy I was talking mess. And I think I know Jay Leon from Vegas. You know, I've seen him train before. He's a great boxer. So I mean, it's cool that Willie has that option now because Willie does have an option. Like he put his name in that drawing, and maybe it's Jake, maybe it's one of his teammates. But there's another option for a fighter, and I respect that.
Last thing before I let you go, you told me about like the management team that you are starting. How is that going? You know, we last spoke like 4 months ago. How do you feel like that's progressing?
It's progressive, man. I mean, it's definitely like it's nothing that's going to happen overnight. You know, I've got a great team of guys that are up and coming. We just booked the whole team fights. So everybody's got a fight coming up that's on our roster. We just got one of our girls contracting Invicta. So we're starting to get up to the bigger names and bigger leagues. But my biggest thing is getting my show going. So September will be our first Showtime fighting series. We'll have my own show going in Wisconsin. We'll start there. But now that's going to give me the opportunity to give my guys fights and like actually progress this. And so that's what we're waiting on. I mean, the guys are still training, but once the fight show happens, then I have the opportunity to either get them to the bigger shows, but at least, you know, give them fights.
That's great. And shout out to you. I saw that you just launched your own YouTube channel and you had a first episode up that was beautifully shot. I don't know who shot that. Very well done. I love when fighters do that sort of thing. So I urge everyone out there to check that out. Just type in your name and Anthony Showtime Pettis comes out. So you're doing big things, man. You got a baby on the way. Congratulations. New home. You got the management group, the YouTube channel. It's all looking up for Anthony Pettis. Can't wait. April 23rd, this Friday, the night before UFC 261. PFL is back, headlined by Clay Collard versus Anthony Pettis. Looking forward to it. All the best to you, Anthony. Stay safe over there in the bubble in Atlantic City, and good luck on Friday.
All right, bro. Appreciate it.
What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, meeting-free Fridays. Well, what about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch at your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-order stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/DCRC. All lowercase, go to shopify.com/DCRC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/DCRC.
All right, let's say hello now to our next guest. You know, there's a lot of attention this weekend. UFC 261, three title fights, of course, Jorge Masvidal versus Kamaru Usman at the very top of the bill. But this main card is extremely interesting, if you ask me. You also have Anthony Smith versus Jimmy Crute, and you also have a rematch that is 11 years, almost 11 years in the making. The Battle of New York going down in Jacksonville. We've got Uriah Hall, who's on quite the winning streak as well, against the man himself, the former UFC middleweight champion, looking to make it two in a row, our old friend Chris Weidman. Chris, how are you?
That's right. I'm good. How are you, Ariel?
I'm doing great. There's so much to talk to you about. First, let's get the most important thing out of the way. This fight was supposed to happen in February. Unfortunately, you got COVID. How are you feeling? Any lasting, lingering effects from it?
Yeah, no, I was good. It was 2 days, kind of sucked. And then, I didn't work out and do anything until 2 weeks later, and just having 2 weeks off because I was told those long-term effects that last for a long time. Happen a lot if you're training through it. So I didn't want any issues. And so I was on the antibiotics and I just tried to do everything right. And then at the end of the 2 weeks, I tried to jump in back into camp and it was too much. And then UFC, you know, we postponed it. And I didn't, I just kind of expected to get like 2 or 3 weeks, you know, time and then get the fight. And then they postponed it, you know, a couple of months. But it ended up working out really well because I stayed in shape. You know, my father-in-law ended up passing. So it, just timing wise, I was able to, you know, focus on some things, but also like focus on like family matter type stuff. And then also, you know, continue staying in shape and just get better and better.
And I'm very sorry about your father-in-law. I know we spoke about it a little bit privately, so we don't have to, you know, go too deep into that now. And I know your wife very close to her father. How is the family doing after? Because my understanding was a pretty traumatic accident, correct?
Yeah, he was crossing the street, going to my gym. You know, he was a big fan of the guys at the gym, and he was very supportive. You know, going to all their fights from the amateurs to the pros, and he was there. You know, watching Marab spar and stuff, and he was crossing the street, got stuck in the median, and he forgot his mask. He went to pat his legs, went to turn to go back to his car, and there was a car actually pulling up. One of the kids from the gym. One of the guys from the gym was dropping off one of his kids for private lessons, and he clipped him. Thank God there was footage, so you could see it was completely accidental. There was nobody who did anything wrong, so that it was easy to put that, you know, to rest. You didn't have to, you know, we didn't have to get all crazy, and it was just super traumatic situation for everybody. And he was just a great guy. He was at every single one of my fights. You know, we miss him a lot.
I'm so sorry. Any death is horrendous, but that is an incredible set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. So for this fight on Saturday, who will be in your corner?
So Matt's not going to be in my corner. He's taking a break on cornering. I know you know some of that stuff because it was public. But Ray's going to be in my corner. Wonderboy is going to be in my corner. And this young up-and-coming wrestler, Division I All-American, this kid, his name's Tom Lane, wrestled at Cal Poly. He's actually from Long Island. I would train with him all the time out there, anytime he was back home from school. And he happened to just move out here around the same time I moved out here. So just another great training partner.
So is this the first time in your career that Matt's on your corner?
You know, I don't know if it's the first. I think maybe once or maybe one other time. I have to really think about it. Maybe one other time or two other times, like just if there was some type of conflict, scheduling conflict or something for his family. But it's definitely, you know, well, he wasn't in my corner for my last fight. So there you go. Akhmedov, because of COVID, I needed my workout partners. He was super closed off. So it kind of ruined that. But you know, obviously I got to respect, but I love Matt. I'm going to miss him. He's such a good, great coach, a great cornerman. So, you know, I wish he could be there, but he needs to do what he's got to do.
Did you try to convince him or not really?
Yeah. I tried, but I spoke to him about it. We spoke for about a half an hour. Actually right before his podcast even came out, and, I understood where he was coming from, and you know, he definitely needs a little time.
When this fight was on the verge of being put together, like was Uriah Hall, and we'll get into the history in a second, but just like 2021 Uriah Hall, was he on your radar? Like post Akhmedov, did you feel like this was a fight that made sense for you and him? Was this someone that you thought they might present to you?
You know, not really. It wasn't one of the names I was thinking. I was trying to get that fight with Brunson. They ended up, you know, hitting me up about Uriah Hall. I'm like, all right, yeah, you know what? I'm excited about that. I'm excited because I know it's a big fight for him. I know he has to be super motivated because it was his first loss. And that just excites me, knowing that he's going to be super motivated. He's going to want to, you know, beat me. And I'm just not going to let that happen. I just feel that I'm resisting the hell out of that. So I can't let him have that back. And, you know, it's just such a long history between me and him. And it's pretty cool. It's like a cool story.
It's an amazing story. So for those that don't know, you were 2-0. He was 4-0. Ring of Combat, your middleweight debut. Massive fight on the East Coast. You were two of the biggest prospects at middleweight in the entire country, if not the world. and you go in there and beat him. This is 2010, September of 2010, to be exact. You go in and beat him. Your stock continues to rise. He eventually makes it to the UFC. This is all part of your journey to the UFC. It was a really big deal. What do you remember? I believe it happened in Atlantic City, if memory serves me correct.
Exactly.
What do you remember from all of that?
So it was the Ring of Combat for the Ring of Combat Championship. He was the champion. And at that time, he was knocking out everybody he fought. And I was dominating everybody I fought. You know, I submitted everybody. I had a submission in TKO. And they were billing it as the winner of that fight was going to go to the UFC. So it was just a huge, it was a huge fight for me. And I was prepared. I was coming off a hand surgery where I was just kind of out for almost a year. And I still really couldn't punch in my right hand. So the training camp was a lot of left hooks and stuff. And so I really just focused on that and my wrestling. Because otherwise, at that time, I was making no money. I was living in my parents' basement. And, you know, I just needed to get a fight in. Otherwise, I was going to have to change careers. So I took the fight with him. And I knew that possibly taking me to the UFC. And I remember there was a girl who hit me up because we were the two biggest names in New York at middleweight, you know, and we were both, you know, my camp felt like I was unbeatable. His camp felt like he was unbeatable. He belonged to Tiger Showman's at that time, which they have, I think, almost 30 schools, you know, or maybe even more than that in the tri-state area. So I knew a bunch of people who did karate there since they were kids and stuff like that. And I remember getting a message from somebody on Facebook, this girl who I went to high school with, and she was just like, Chris, I love you, but I just want you to like know, like he's a very dangerous person. Like, please be careful. Please be careful. And I'm like, I just remember seeing that message, like, what? Like, do you know who you're talking to? Like, because I'm not as intimidating, I guess, as him. And right. You know, when you're in that martial art background, you know, you could kind of blow people out of proportion. And he is great, you know, and you know, but there's levels to the game, obviously. And I just remember being so motivated to go out there and like to show people like he's good, but I think I'm a different level of good. And yeah, it was a big one. There was, you know, a lot of fans there for him, a lot of fans there for me. There was a lot of, you know, back and forth a little bit. So it was awesome to go out there and knock him out with that left hook. You know, it was the same left hook I knocked out at Anderson Silva with, like a long left hook, because the kind of the viewpoint at that time was whoever, I just got a phone call.
That's fine. Up.
Whoever in that fight, people expected if we stood up, he was going to be able to knock me out. And if I took him to the ground, I'd finish him on the ground, but to be able to knock him out like that was definitely an awesome feeling, and win the belt and then eventually go to the UFC. It was cool.
Yeah. You finished him in the first round, 3 minutes and 6 seconds. Why do you think, you know, if you go back and watch the fight, and the fight is it's online, you can see it. Why do you think we don't get fights like, I feel like we don't get fights like that anymore, like these like regional fights with big time prospects, turf wars, so to speak. I feel like that's not a thing in the sport. Is it because there are just so many fighters in the UFC that you don't have that like build up anymore? Because I remember when this fight happened, I remember it being a big deal in the Northeast. Do you know what I'm talking about? It feels like this is not, and by the way, is everything okay? Do you need to get that or?
It's my son. I think he just keeps calling me from inside on his iPad. I want to strangle him.
Do you know what I'm saying though? Like, it feels like we don't get those fights anymore. Why do you think that is?
I think back then, in my eyes, you always wanted to fight the best. And my goal was to get to UFC as fast as possible. And the way to do that was not to fight Joe Schmoes and, you know, guys I know I was going to beat. There was no building up my career. It was train my ass off and fight the best guys in the world. And then that's what's going to get me to the UFC. And now there's a lot of like almost a boxing mentality, I think, where, you know, let's, you know, get 5 or 6 wins against guys that we kind of like almost know we could beat. I feel like it's trending in that direction, you know, and maybe that's a smarter way of doing it, of, you know, building people's careers. People, there's more money in the sport now. There's more eyes on it. You got more people injecting their opinions onto people. And so if that fight was to be happening now, they'd be like, oh, that's too soon. They shouldn't be fighting each other, you know, but that wasn't the mentality back then.
Is there bad blood between you guys?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I don't think there's bad blood. I think there's maybe some awkwardness. You know, it was a big buildup. We were both, you know, New Yorkers, and you know, I ended up winning, and he's definitely competitive. I'm super competitive. So I know there's like a, you know, a chip on her shoulder, and that puts a chip on my shoulder.
Was there bad blood back then?
I remember, so somebody like emailed him or his gym or something about how Chris Weidman was just going to, like, oh, just suggesting to him that he better work on his wrestling because he's going to get like outclassed with wrestling. You're, like, he's a joke or something like that. I had nothing to do with it, but apparently it was like they thought I said it or something. So then there was like some back and forth, and it was stupid. But there was just like there was a rivalry between the Cerro Longo guys and Tiger Showman at that time. We were pretty much the two biggest MMA teams around. You know, they had tons of fighters because they had so many locations, and we had great fighters. You know, so it was just always, and they had some great fighters too, including obviously Uriah Hall, but they had some other great ones. So there was this rivalry for sure. We weren't cross training. Like, we cross trained with a lot of gyms on Long Island, but the Tiger Showman guys and us, that wasn't a thing. Things have changed, obviously, but at that time.
Who would have thought almost 11 years later, you're fighting out of South Carolina, he's fighting out of Dallas, Texas, no longer with Tiger Showman's, right? Isn't that, like, if I would have told you that 11 years ago, no way you believe me.
It's absolutely insane. I mean, I just think it's such a cool story. You know, both of us, MMA is, you know, there's a lot of fighters, you know, mixed martial arts, and a lot of fighters come and go. And for us to still be in the game 11 years later and being on the top of the, you know, top of the middleweight division and, you know, on our way to the championship again, it's crazy. We both had different careers. You know, he had a great career in his own right, and he obviously still has more he wants to accomplish and not being, you know, ever fighting for the belt or, you know, winning the championship. And I have goals for myself as well. So it's, I think you're going to see two motivated and shaped guys who are going to go after each other.
What do you make of his recent winning streak? He's won three in a row. He's coming off a win over a guy you know very well, Anderson Silva, but obviously not the same Anderson Silva that you beat many moons ago. Are you impressed? Like, do you feel like this narrative out there that he's changed, that he's evolved, that he's much better now? Is it legit, or do you feel like it's a matter of him fighting the right opponent?
You know, I think it's all in his head. I just think all improvement is usually in the head. And if he feels like he's getting better, then that's great. But I think at the end of the day, he's still, you know, a great striker. I don't know how much better of a striker he is now than he was when he was coming up. And his wrestling and jujitsu are still something that I'm going to say he definitely has improved on his wrestling and jujitsu since then. But I do feel like the levels between me and him are still pretty, there's a big gap there. I feel like I'm very comparable on the feet with him. I might not be as flashy and can do as many of the techniques that he can do. But as far as like just straight boxing and striking techniques, I think I'm right there with him. I don't think if it was a grappling match, though, it would be that close. I think I would be way superior than him. So I just think it was almost kind of the same then. I was way more green with my striking then, but I still had heavy hands, you know, and that's what got me, won that fight for me. And I had that deception where you have to worry about me taking you down because that could be game over for you. And I'm still going to, you know, be punching at your face. So I think there's a lot of things that he has to worry about, and that he's very dangerous as well. He was very dangerous back then. There was a lot of me working on the spinning back kicks to the body, spinning back kicks to the head. You know, he's got a right hand, you know, a good jab, you know, he has matured. He's more experienced. So he's going to be way more calm, but we both are going to have that, you know, we're both way more experienced. We're going to be more calm than we were. I have a lot of respect for Uriah Hall.
Yeah.
But that being said, I just feel like I'm on a different level than him.
Any pressure whatsoever because the first fight, you know, went your way and you won in 3 minutes. Like, if this goes three rounds, it wasn't as impressive as the first time. It's an indictment on where I'm at. Like, do you think about that? I need to do this even quicker than the last time. Do you think about that sort of thing?
No. Because listen, every fight is so different.
Right.
That was 11 years ago. It'd be great to finish them quicker, but that's not like my goal. I'm going to finish them as fast as possible. I'm ready for 15 minutes hard fight. That being said, my goal is to go out there and make a world-class fighter feel like he's never fought before and just outclass him. That's the goal. And if a finish comes with me doing that, then that's perfect.
What
if
about,
it doesn't, if we go 15 minutes, you know, then all credit to him.
Mm. Well, what about confidence wise going into the Akhmedov fight? You know, the whole narrative was you hadn't won in 3 years, 2-fight losing streak. Now you're coming off a win. Weidman's back, and it was an impressive win. And I think that win will age. I don't think you got enough credit for that win and your performance in that fight, if I do say so myself. Do you feel like, oh, you know, there's less pressure, less of a weight, you know, a weight has been lifted off my shoulder? Like, is the mindset any different coming off a win as opposed to that long layoff without a win?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, when was the last time a Dagestanian got out grappled? I mean, how often does that happen?
No, I don't know. You know? I mean, it's I thought it was it very was, impressive.
He,
and then
he doesn't have a big name, but that he's, as far as a matchup for me, he's probably the worst type of matchup. A big, strong wrestler who's tough as hell, and he just, you know.
And then he looked great in his next fight against Tom Breeze.
Yeah, so that was a great fight for me, but. That fight, I got super tired in that fight. I really, with COVID during that time, it was hard to really get the proper training in. My weight was really struggling to get down for that fight because the fight before that was 205. And you know, it was over a year or a little less than a year that I hadn't, well, more than a year that I haven't cut back down to 85 at that point. So I don't think my body was ready to go down. My weight is great this time. I'm actually, my weight, I just checked my notes. It's exactly where I was when I fought Mark Munoz before that fight. And that fight is when I felt literally the best I've ever felt in my career. You put the Anderson Silva fights in there, Ian Machida fight, and, you know, Vitor, whatever. Well, some of my greatest wins, I never felt better than I felt in that octagon against Mark Munoz. And so my weight is exactly where I want it to be. I was able to stay in the gym this whole time, this whole year since that fight. I haven't been out of the gym. That hasn't happened in a while, to be completely honest. And you know, I'm going to prove it in this fight, but when I won the belt, I just, you know, I started cutting corners, you know, after the Machida fight, once I knew I had to beat Anderson Silva again the second time. And then when I fought Machida, everyone just thought they were all flukes, you know? So I'm like, I got to really dominate Machida. That's going to set me in stone and be, you know, great for my legacy. So I worked my ass off for that fight. And that Machida fight was an awesome fight for me. And then starting at the Vitor Belfort fight was when I started like trying to do less. Instead of doing as much as possible, I started trying to do as least as possible. And I started cutting corners just in everything. You know, my camps got smaller. I would do less workouts. You know, I had injuries. So I'm like, I thought I was in my back of my head. I'm telling myself it's because I want to, you know, keep my body feeling healthy. So do less. But it was just me, you know, I just started cutting corners and I just don't think my goals were aligned. What was I doing? I already accomplished everything I wanted at that point. So it was hard. It was hard to like really push the way I was pushing. And then, you know, I still was able to get through that Vitor fight and do great on very short camps and really only training during camps. And it was bad. And then obviously I had my losses, you know, and really I feel like right now I just feel renewed, and not really because I won my last fight against a tough guy. It's the whole move and everything, getting out here, going to a new gym, putting myself in uncomfortable situations. You know, I was very comfortable in Long Island, obviously. You know, I had my own gym. I had all my partners I knew very well. And then here I am in this, you know, random place, and I'm training with guys I've never trained before. And, you know, they have certain expectations, and just leveled me up. It leveled me up, and I've been in great shape for months now, as opposed to just getting in shape. And I know it's going to pay off. I feel I don't want to be the old Chris Weidman, because a lot of people say, oh, you got to go back to the, like, There's a new Chris Weidman. There's some tactics and things that I did when I was doing great in some of my fights. It really came from my training and my mindset at that time. Now I really know I'm a better fighter now. I have way more experience. I'm cleaner with my techniques. But now I'm going back to working as hard as I possibly can. And not cutting corners. You know, I'm working out Sundays a lot. Like, I used to just take off the weekends, you know, and I never did that when I was, you know, crushing myself. But towards the end of, you know, my belt reign and then some of the fights afterwards, it was me just cutting corners and not realizing it. I kind of was just wanted to rush right back into another fight. You know, I lose, I'm like, oh, I'm better than that. I know my potential. And then I just try to rush back in without really addressing the situations. And I didn't want to really know that truth. But so having some time off and refreshing, like time to refresh the mind, I really just feel like I'm in such a good mental space right now. And my body is in a space that it's never been before.
So when you think back, and I appreciate that honesty, when you think back, do you have regrets? Like, do you wish that you didn't cut those corners? Do you tell yourself, man?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, I'm not a regret guy, to be honest. I don't really like dwell on things that, you know, I didn't do. I feel like it all kind of builds you to who you are. And that's the reality. So you better be okay with that and learn from there. But just like everybody told me when I became champion, like you better, don't let it get to your head. And, you know, you want to, you know, I still was that blue collar guy. I wasn't buying Rolls Royces and stuff like that. Like, it didn't get to my head that way, but it got into my head where, like, I felt like I was okay. I could still win doing less. Mm. And so, I mean, I wish I didn't. I would tell myself, if I could talk to myself at that time, I would tell myself exactly what I'm telling you right now, is that, you know, don't do less, do more, just keep upping it, you know. And you obviously have to be smart at the same time, but I think it all happened. I think it all happened for a reason. I'm that guy who, you know, feels like, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I'm an optimistic person. And I feel like my future is very strong. I have strong goals right now. You know, I want to completely dominate him. And then I want to fight someone else, you know, big name guy. I don't know who it's going to be yet, and dominate him. And then let's see who's fighting for the title next. You know, I want the people to want to see me fight for the title. I'm not going to be begging. It's got to just happen with my work, you know.
You believe in your heart, though, you will be champion again.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I will be champion again. I'll defend the belt, and then peace.
That's the plan. That's the goal. One title victory, one defense, and then you're out.
Yeah. Yep. That's it. So about four fights.
Four fights. You're 36.
Four fights. And I just know for everybody who's out there who, you know, they see me lose. So it's not like they're just pure haters. They've seen me, you know, not look great in the cage. And so for them, it's hard to take me serious when I say this. But that's the truth. I know the truth. I'm not a cocky guy. I'm not someone who lives off of false reality. I know what I feel in the cage. I know my training. I know the people I train with. I've sparred with some of the best guys in the world, some of the biggest names that we see in the Octagon. And I just know where I'm at. It's not like, you know, as someone who's trained with me, if I'm just, you know, a guy who is got a false sense of reality, I'm not that guy at all. I would have hung it up a long time ago if I thought that. I mean, I became the world champion. I did some amazing things. Still at this point, no one's defended the belt longer than me other than Anderson Silva. And so I know where I'm at. The Adesanya fight excites the hell out of me. I would love to get that opportunity, you know, but I have some work to do and I'm excited to have that opportunity. You know, he's a great matchup for me. So I'm excited. I'm just excited about this whole middleweight division and kind of this resurgence that I have for the sport and my training.
So let me ask you this before I let you go. At the same time, Robert Whittaker was defeating the guy, you know, Kelvin Gastelum. Do you think Whittaker can beat Izzy? This new version of you do?
I do think that. Yeah. I think he went into that first fight really, more wild than I've ever seen him. He was not comfortable. You watch him in this fight, he was just a way more comfortable human being. This fight, he looked amazing. I thought he did great. His leaping jab to his head kick was just so beautiful. Some of the techniques he was throwing were just so sharp. And to do it against a guy like Kelvin Gastelum, his defense with his footwork, his management of spacing, his covering with the left hands from Gastelum, everything was really, he was on. Even with his takedowns where he hit the double unders and right to a nice takedown, he blew me away. I thought he did excellent, and I think he can beat Adesanya.
All right, and perhaps down the line we shall see you versus either Israel Adesanya.
Yeah, or I love Whittaker. I really don't want to fight him, but we did a podcast together once. And I was like, yeah, this guy is just the man. I can't imagine really standing across the octagon from him. But obviously, if we had to, we will. It would be an honor. But Adesanya, to me, I would love, you know, that fight. I wouldn't be feeling too bad, you know.
Oh, you don't like Izzy?
No, you know, I don't. It's not that I don't like him. It's just that we've had like a little weird past too, like at events. He was getting a little chirpy.
And oh, really?
This is a few years ago. He had put up a video or something of.
Yeah, what was that video? Were you like
me in the Dunkin' Donuts?
Yeah, it was
like 5 a.m. My wife was outside of it, and I think we're at the event. He's doing a video of me. Oh, you mind if we do a video? We're talking. He's like, yeah, one day I'm gonna beat this guy. Ha ha. He's like laughing. I'm like, wait, who are you? This was when he was, maybe he just had won one fight in the UFC, and whatever. He was all right. And then, but he was definitely drinking a little bit. And then I guess later on that night, we were like in Dunkin' Donuts, and I guess he filmed me. He was being cool with me in there, but then he's filming me saying something. I don't even know what he was saying. I don't remember, but yeah, he's not really like my guy that I'm going to be hanging out with too much, for sure.
Wow. Okay. So there's a bit of a backstory there. That's good for the countdown. That's good when the time comes.
There you go. I want you to narrate that one for me.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah. The hair looks great. Everything, your mindset looks great. I mean, I'm excited about this new, the South Carolina version of Chris Weidman. I saw you talking about
Carolina Chris.
Oh, that is good. Are we going with that? Is that a real thing?
I'm still the old American, but hashtag Carolina Chris. You know,
I love that. And you even dared to say that Carolina bagels are better than New York bagels, which blew my mind. I couldn't believe you said that.
Shut your mouth.
Yeah, I couldn't believe
that. Blasphemy. Blasphemy. Listen, I love being out here, but as far as pizza and bagels, they have some decent spots. And, you know, there's a bunch of Long Island guys who came down here and they opened up some great spots. But you can't compare it to Long Island. Just the competition grows, just superior foods, you know? And I would say I missed that, but to be honest, I've been eating pretty healthy, for a while now, and bagels and pizza really aren't on the menu.
Right. So yeah, that's true. All right. Well, best of luck, my friend. I look forward to it. A fight for, I'd like to think this is a fight for like the old school Northeast fans, you know, a rematch of a fight that happened many, many moons ago that we didn't think would ever happen again. And so it kind of brings back some nostalgic feelings. Can't wait to see how you look in there. Wish you the best. Thank you as always for the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. So great stuff there from Chris Weidman, from Anthony Pettis, from Tyron Woodley. I have to say, few things would make me happier than to see the MMA community rally around Tyron Woodley to get this big time fight against Jake Paul. I know everyone and their mother is calling out Jake Paul, but man, it has been a rough go for Tyron Woodley, and he has had this up and down relationship, I think unfairly so, with the fans. And I see him getting support now. It warms my heart. Few things would make me happier than to see him get this, see the fans rally around him, and then see him, you know, get that support leading up to a big fight like this. It would just be nice. It would be nice for a guy who has, given a lot to the sport. And I wrote a thing for ESPN.com on Wednesday. We will appreciate, and I said at the time, we will appreciate him more when he is gone. One of the all-time best at 170, had some big wins, and unfortunately for various reasons, didn't really connect with the audience, and now maybe his career in the UFC is over, but it sounds like he still wants to fight, so we'll see how this whole thing plays out. Like I said, it's a very busy next few days in the world of MMA. As always, a lot going on. We've got one on TNT 3, headlined by John Lineker, so that's fun, this evening. That's Wednesday evening on TNT, so check that out at 10 p.m. Eastern. PFL making their return, long-awaited, much-anticipated return on Friday on ESPN Plus and ESPN 2. A lot of familiar names on the prelims, names like Chris Wade, names like Brendan Loughnane going up against Shaman Moraes. Great to see Brendan back in the mix. And the main card is a very fun one. You got Bubba Jenkins against Lance Palmer, Marcin Held against Natan Schulte. And then, of course, the big one is the main event, Anthony Pettis versus Clay Collard. I'm a big fan of variety, of competition,
of different promotions popping up. And so I hope that PFL is successful this year as they make their return to live MMA action. LFA on Friday as well. KSW 60 on Saturday before 261. And then the big one is UFC 261 this Saturday on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. Like I said, three title fights on this card. Capacity crowd. They just announced this deal with Clear. You have to fill out a form beforehand. Honor system. They're giving out masks. I'm happy to see all of this. We also have two title fights on the card as well for women's MMA. And that's just the second time. The other time, the first time was UFC 193. Holly Holm versus Ronda Rousey, of course, in Melbourne, Australia. And Valerie Letourneau against Ioane Jacek. So this is big. Kamaru Usman, 13 wins in a row. Second longest streak to start a UFC career behind 16 in a row by the great Anderson Silva. Longest active winning streak in the sport right now. If Jorge Masvidal wins in what will be his 50th pro fight, amazingly, and his 20th UFC fight, it would be the second most fights before winning their first UFC championship in UFC history. The record is currently held by Michael Bisping, who won a UFC title in his 26th UFC fight against Luke Rockhold, of course, back at UFC 199. So a lot at stake here. Rose Namajunas trying to become the first female in UFC history to win the same title two separate occasions. No one has ever done that before. Valentina Shevchenko involved in the closest fight as far as the odds are concerned since her first title fight at 125 against Joanna Jacek a few years ago. She's a minus 400 favorite against Jessica Andrade, the former strawweight champion, looking to become a champion in a second weight class, which would be a first as well for someone who won, lost. Of course, Amanda Nunes has two titles, but for someone who won the belt, lost the belt, and now getting a chance to win a belt in a different weight class as well. So there's a lot there. Plus, I love the Anthony Smith-Jimmy Crute fight. A potential passing of the torch, if you will, old guard versus new guard, Chris Weidman versus Uriah Hall, a rematch of a fight, like I said, that happened almost 11 years ago. Prelims, which begin at 6 p.m. Eastern, have some interesting names as well. Randy Brown versus Alex Oliveira, Brendan Allen against Carl Roberson, the return of Tristan Connolly, Canada's own Tristan Connolly against Pat Sabatini. So, you know, some interesting names, but to me, this main card is top-notch stuff. Those five fights are phenomenal, and I'm looking forward to them very much. So we got all that coming up. There's a press conference on Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and they'll have the three title fights on display there, the six competitors. Weigh-ins on Friday morning. We've got Ariel and the Bad Guy Wednesday night and Thursday night on ESPN+. We'll have a weigh-in show for you at 9 a.m. on ESPN Plus and the ESPN MMA YouTube channel. We got a lot coming your way. Speaking of the ESPN MMA YouTube channel, you can check out my interview with Ben Askren, which we posted Monday night after his loss. No one handles these situations better than Ben Askren. Very humble in defeat and very introspective and honest, and doesn't really come across as someone who has a bruised ego. So check that out. Plus, you can check out all the other stuff that we have regarding 261 and these interviews from today if you want to watch them. All that stuff and more, so check it out. And of course, please continue to rate, download, subscribe, and review. It's very important. That's what they tell me. All right? Thank you. Back on Monday, DC and Helwani. Enjoy the fights. I'll be seeing you and talking to you a lot between now and Monday. But for now, back next week, same time and place. Until then, I say peace. I'm out of here.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.